All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, everybody, welcome back to another high-caliber, action-packed episode here of the Crypto 101 podcast, where I am joined, as always, by my faithful compadre, the notorious P.I.Z., Mr. Pizza Mind. How are we doing today, buddy?
Honestly, man, my faith is shook after this last drop to about 42K in Bitcoin. We're recording this in the middle of May right now. And it's not fair, Bryce. Like, I just want to buy and hold. I was just taught to have diamond hands. And I'm wondering, is this another false truth, an incorrect narrative, some bullshit that we're being fed while these other sophisticated traders get to go make money in both directions? But I can't. Bryce, I need a hero. Can you get one for me?
I need a hero.
Well, exactly.
Dude, honestly, I'm glad you asked, because we have with us today a guy who's navigated just about every market you can think of, a guy who was in the pits. And when I say the pits, I mean, this guy was screaming with his head off at people for years and years and years, making markets, trading derivatives. Rob Levy founded the Hero Network. Rob, welcome to the show. Let's dive into some crypto trading. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, we're excited. I mean, it's not every day we get a pit trader. And I think pit trading has a lot of lessons in it that people, you know, people are very removed from trading markets right now. It's all digital. It's not physical like it used to be, right? Yeah. And so we want to kind of hear a little bit about your backstory and how that kind of segued into starting a crypto derivatives network. So let's just go back, you know, in college, were you like, you know, the smartest mathematical wizard dude, or were you like, you know, what was going on?
That's funny. I've always been a math guy from when I was little. And it's funny, because I was going over some timetables with my daughter, and was thinking about when I learned time stuff, and we used to play games in the classroom where you'd have to beat other people at giving the answer the quickest. And I was usually the winner there. I was really fast and competitive with the numbers. So I was a math guy. And to be honest, the first time that I stepped foot on the trading floor, the Chicago Board Options Exchange, when I was after my freshman year of college, I knew that I was going to trade in those trading pits. It was like a sport, but not really a sport, because the trading floor, with the energy and the noise, it felt like you were walking into a real arena every day. You take the escalator down or up, depending on which floor you're coming from. It literally felt like you were walking out onto the football field or in the basketball. It was crazy. And then
and when I think about that, I mean, just that experience, you are like an NFL athlete, right? You're trading billions, potentially even trillions of dollars of notional volume on behalf of, you know, corporations. You are their gladiator.
It's like the sport for nerds, for numbers nerds and people who are fast and loud and could keep a lot of stuff in their mind. And then years later, you know, we would have headsets even. So then you could be talking to somebody who's sitting in an office across the street from the exchange in front of 10 screens, and you're communicating what he's seeing on the screens, what's working in the pit, and you're telling each other, do that. It's crazy. I mean, literally was, and there's going to be movies and shows about it because they just announced, at least at the Board of Trade, which is the CME now, that they're keeping the pits closed, you know, after COVID.
Wow. After COVID,
They're only keeping the Eurodollar option pit open. Everything else, all the agriculture pits, which I personally feel are needed and they serve a really great purpose. And you know, one of the most crucial markets of Earth, you know, the food market, right? I mean, you don't mess around with food security. So I don't know. I think they should have kept some of those pits open, but it's a sport to me. And it was
the original esport. Greatest is essentially what it is.
Yes. Cause you're on headsets. You got guys, doing it is. And it was the best, dude. I'm telling you.
All right.
Yeah.
So let's explain it to anyone who doesn't know what options are. Can you break down what is an option trader doing as opposed to actually buying and selling these goods?
Yeah, sure. So options and futures are what we call derivatives. And they're called derivatives because they're not, when you're buying or selling a corn option or a corn future, you know, you're not buying or selling actual corn. You're buying and selling a contract that moves, it tracks the corn market. And there are expiration dates on these options and futures that trade on the exchange. So you know, at whatever date in time, that option or future is going to settle. And some options and futures will settle to wherever the price of that commodity or stock or index is trading at that very moment. It's a cash settle. So the only thing that changes hands is cash money in your account. But some options and futures settle to the actual item like corn or wheat or soybean or gold or oil. And you can actually get delivery of this product. Now, we used to joke and think like, oh, they'll come deliver a big truckload and dump it of corn on your lawn. Like, no, that's not what's going to happen. There's, you know, registered storage facilities that take care of all the delivery. So it's not like if you're trading one lots of this stuff, you're going to get corn delivered. But, you know, there's actual physical delivery with a lot of these futures and options as well. So derivatives are really the most important instruments or contracts that facilitate the true transfer of risk. Because in the end, there's when it comes to a lot of commodities and assets, there's a producer of this and a user of it. And it's like corn or oil, the people who are growing it, they need to manage their risk of where's the price going to go at harvest time. And then the people who are using it, who are either feeding animals or making Coca-Cola or whatever, they need to manage their risk of, well, I know I need to buy a certain amount of this stuff. I want to manage the price risk I have of these crazy markets.
Yeah, let's actually, this is a great part of the show to kind of talk about the different sorts of market participants, like the COT, like kind of trade report. Like we have, like you said, like the farmers and like the institutions that are not speculating on prices by any means, they're hedging, right? So they're producing corn, they're selling futures in order to lock the price in so that if there's a locust or a harvest fire or a tornado, they're not totally wiped out. And then on the other side of that, there's speculators, but there's many market participants. So can you break those down for us?
Sure. So, you know, in the agricultural market, we would call anybody who was really in the business of handling like the asset, the corn or whatever, they were commercials, right? So the commercials are the entities that are actually dealing with, they're growing it, they're using it. And
similar to Bitcoin miners.
Correct.
Yes. To bring it back to crypto.
Absolutely. Bitcoin miners would be commercials because they're actually mining. They're producing the Bitcoin and then they have to do something with it. They can hold it forever, which is what we're going to do. But you can hold it, or a lot of them, they need to sell a certain amount of it to pay their bills. Their electricity bills are paid in US dollars or euros or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So they need to sell something and pay their bills.
Their taxes, right, are denominated in US dollars and...
Correct. So the commercials are the people who are, they're hedging their risk. It's options and futures are all about risk management to them. And it's all done across a term structure, or as a trader would call it, a forward curve, with expiration dates that could be a week out, a month out, 3 months out, a year, 2 years, 5 years. I mean, if you're in the business, you know I'm going to be producing Bitcoin in 5 years. So if the futures are trading so high out there, maybe I'll hedge some of my risk and lock some of that crazy price in. So it's all about, to the commercials, managing the time frame of their risk, whether they're selling what they're producing or whether they are buying what they need to use. And that's the biggest thing with the derivatives markets, really, is the tenor, or the term structure, how things are trading at different points in time along the curve.
So let me offer an analogy and make sure I understand correctly, and all of our listeners do as well. Let's say I have a fantasy football team and I don't know if my defense is going to win against my opponent this week, but perhaps then I could make an options contract, or a little side pocket, if you will, that says I'm going to get X number of tackles, or if I get an interception, it's worth this much points to try and still allow me to win in my head-to-head battle. Is that correct?
Well, what you're doing there is you're using a different contract that's not the actual contract. You already know you have a quote-unquote bet on this week. You've got your defense. So you know that if your defense wins, you get a certain amount. But now you're trying to isolate your risk to your different players. And I love that. That's a great strategy.
Yeah. Like, let's say my opponent has Tom Brady and I'm like, well, great. You know, he's going to light us up, but maybe we get one pick and that helps hedge the overall loss into a victory.
Yep. Or yet, you know that if Brady does light everybody up, you're probably going to lose. So maybe you'll take Brady over 300 yards because it's paying, you know, 2-1 or something like that. You can actually hedge your risk of Brady lighting your ass up, and you don't necessarily.
I got the Bengals defense. I mean, that'd be great. I could draft my defense last and then just get a little options contract that says I'm going to absolutely get annihilated every week and still win overall.
Hey, would you three be down to make a new podcast, and it's called the Crypto Fantasy Sports Math League? Like, because there's some serious alpha in that right now.
Dude, we are. I mean, so some of the options that we've developed, these contracts, are paramutuals, and we are absolutely using them for sports applications like that. They're extremely very valuable instruments.
Extremely valuable instruments.
Yeah. So I'm with you. There's so much to do with managing risk, and it's really all about expected value, right? Mm. If you can really track.
Let's dive into that. That is such a buzzword that everybody's talking about on Twitter and, you know, in Bloomberg and everything. So expected value, but it's such a key concept for listeners to understand. So I want you to break that down for everyone.
Yeah. Expected value is what the probability, the likelihood of what your position or what it is going to be worth at, you know, in options and futures, we look at expiration, but if you're doing it in sports, it's really at the event, right? Like, what if I win, if my defense shuts Brady down, what am I going to win this week? You know, how many, and then you look at that expected value and you have to model what are the probabilities of that happening. And then you can kind of pinpoint places where you can try to optimize your expected value. You know, you have a lot of exposure somewhere. So maybe you can cut down on some of that exposure or hedge it by taking the other side on some other bets or positions that will help ease if the unknown event actually happens, right? Mm. Like, I think I'm going to win, but there's this chance that I'm not, and I can actually get 5-1 odds on this other contract here of Brady throwing 400 yards. That's a great hedge for me. If he throws 400 yards, I'm going to lose this game 100%. So like, it's kind of, you look for what the payout structures are. And then as you get closer to the actual expiration, you can now take bets like at halftime or in the third quarter or in real time. You can keep kind of betting on Brady as your hedge if it makes sense to you with your overall risk. So it's crunching a lot of numbers. Models are updating in real time as conditions are changing. And you're constantly, you know, you have this expected payout value that you're managing.
That's a phenomenal explanation. And this is this next question is something I probably should have asked in the very beginning, but take yourself back to like when you were first learning how to trade. Because again, a lot of people on the show, they might just be getting their feet wet with, you know, finding out how to get exposed to the crypto market. So, you know, not giving any explicit financial advice, but just generally, what are some good habits? What are some big no-nos? What are some, like, you know, the rules of thumbs that have kind of been good guideposts for you to now be, you know, a super successful crypto killer?
Well, I'll tell you, it comes back to that one word, which is value. And the thing that's really helped me the most in navigating, because let's be honest, you know, when you get in here, I'm not the smartest guy in the room when it comes to protocols. And you know, this is like cutting edge technology. I'm not going to be the expert there. I need to lean on other people's assessment who know tech better. But when it comes to markets, relative value is something that is always fundamentally important in a market. So I'll give an example of using relative value to try to outperform or at least do well in a market. And the example I'll use is Solana Network. Now, Hero Network, we chose to build our parimutuel protocol and our options protocol on the Solana Network, which is a layer one blockchain. If you don't know anything about it, I would definitely look it up because it is one of the strongest teams and communities working on you know, some really, really great blockchain technology. So Solana right now is trading at about a $15 billion market cap. And that is, if you take all the tokens that are in circulation and you multiply that by the price that the tokens are trading, that gives you a circulating market cap. You can also use the total tokens that would ever be in existence to get like a fully diluted market cap. It gives you like a network value for that token. And Solana, which I'm, you know, I'm in it, I'm working on it. So I'm really, you know, I've got some pretty solid information of how they operate and what's going on there. It's trading at about a $15 billion valuation. Now, some competitors to Solana, one, for instance, which has been really popular, it's doing great things, and it's also gained a significant amount of value, is Polkadot. And Polkadot might be trading at a $45 billion market cap. So to me, if I know, holding everything equal, which they might not be, let's assume that everything is equal. They both have the same size community and they've got the same amount of devs that are working on the stuff, similar types of stuff. And I see Solana trading at a $13 billion and I see Polkadot at a $45 billion. I'm seeing a big difference in value here.
You're buying the discount and selling the premium.
I am always looking to buy the discount, buy what's relatively cheap. And it doesn't mean I want to sell Polkadot against it and get into like a long, short trade. That has a lot more risk to it. But if I'm going to allocate a certain amount of money to something and I'm going to choose between the two, I would probably allocate heavier to the one that, holding everything equal, looks the cheapest.
Today, many small business owners are busier than ever. Because they're focused on managing and growing their businesses, they can't always spend the time that they wish they could on recruiting. And that's why LinkedIn Jobs has made it easier to find and hire the best candidates for free. In fact, I mean, here at Crypto 101, we used LinkedIn to hire our newest employee, Ryan. And funny enough, he actually in turn worked with the folks at LinkedIn to partner with us here on the podcast as a sponsor. So how about that? So you guys can go ahead and get started to post your first job for free and reach LinkedIn's network of 740 million professionals. You could fill out targeted screening questions to get your role in front of the most qualified candidates with the experience, skills, and motivation you need. Then you could use simple tools to filter and prioritize the top candidates that you want to interview. So LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role. And your first job post is free. Just visit linkedin.com/crypto. Again, that's linkedin.com/crypto to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
And Rob, that's a great point you bring up, because I think that's actually one of the biggest catch-22s that traders find themselves in. Where I come from the school of thought of like losers, average losers, right? Like people who say, oh, I just lost 50%, let me double down. It's like, well, that's a losing trade. You should cut your losers quick. You let your winners run. You kind of pyramid those positions and add kind of on weakness to this, the long-term strength. Would you say that that's kind of a good strategy, or what's been like the best performing strategy here in the crypto markets, just in your opinion?
So I think all in all, if you look at relative value as a guidepost, that's the most important thing that's helped me. Mm. Now you have to understand, especially in the crypto market, which is, it's fragmented, information doesn't necessarily flow at the same rate to everybody and to every different part of the world even. So the timing on these things, it can be way off, right? Things can
like the news can be digested so much slower, is what you're saying.
So much slower. Someone who knows that Solana is like faster, better. They just hired the smartest devs from here and there. Like people who know that, they might take their sweet time to buy as much Solana as they can before like it really gets out there that Solana is the shit. Right.
Be right back. Logging into my account to buy more Solana right now.
Yeah, but Solana just made a new all-time high today. Like it's different. Like another thing is when something's gone on a major tear and it's gone green candle after green candle after green candle, I like to wait and wait for a red candle to buy it.
Right? Wait for some panic.
They come. Like that's the one thing about crypto. The red candles are fierce and they're nasty and fast and sharp, and they go deep and it scares the shit out of you a lot of times. So like, I would rather buy after a red candle or two or three than, you know, really buy something after it's just like gotten a shit ton of money flow.
Yeah. My best indicator is always like when, you know, people are panicking on Twitter, and when my mom texts me and questions like, wait, what happened to Bitcoin? Did China ban it? And like, friends are asking me like, bro, how are you doing? I'm like, oh my God, like I'm, you know, take out the mortgage, like buy another Bitcoin, like go for it. Like that's when you know when the panic is there. Like, yeah, we're, you know, we saw last week, you know, that's really the time to buy. And
because even in the most ferocious bull markets, the pullbacks are scary and they happen. And every time you think that we can't go lower right now, like this thing's just going to keep going up, is usually when it happens. And it can turn the emotional tide quickly. People are like having the greatest day, greatest week of their lives. Everything's rolling. And all of a sudden, like you're talking about eating ramen noodles in Miami for the conference. And you know, people are going to cancel trips. It gets so, it's so emotional and psychological. It's nutty, but the dips come. They always come.
They sure do. And that's why we always tell people to be patient. If you miss that first impulse, don't worry, it's coming back like a boomerang, in fact.
Yeah.
But look, I have a question I want to pose to both of you guys, Bryce and you as well, Rob. Yeah. When looking for relative value, you know, our listeners are probably thinking, so should we, you know, sell Ripple, buy XLM? You know, do we sell Ethereum, buy Ethereum Classic? How do we really tell, you know, what do you have any good sources or advice for being able to compare apples to apples? Because we know Ethereum has the largest open source development community in the world. Ethereum Classic does not. Mm-hmm. But it also has a dev fund by one of the richest men in crypto. So does that equal it out? How do you guys think about these things when crypto is so unique?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, if you're working in the relative value space, is making sure you're comparing apples to apples. That is very, very important, because there's times where you might go to CoinGecko or Messari or CoinMarketCap and look something up and see like a market cap, and you look at one thing compared to the next, and it might not be apples and apples. You've got to look at circulating cap against circulating cap, fully diluted market cap against fully diluted market cap. If there's one token that's trading and only 10% of its float is out there, and another one has 100% of its float out there, so you know that there's not going to be a bunch that's going to come out into new people's hands. That's a big, big difference of what can happen in price and what can happen as we go down the road. So apples and apples are the biggest thing here. When you're coming to the actual Ethereum Classic versus Ethereum, I like to look at the actual transactional volume that's going on the network, yes. Right? You can look at who's behind it and how much money is in the foundation and in their coffers to compare that, but how much activity is going on, right? That's like the biggest thing, and how the fees it can generate, like some of that actual network value.
Yeah, I couldn't have even said that better. I was going to say, look at on-chain data, right? In order to see, and some great resources there. If you guys listening at home, like glassnode.com, yep. Glassnode, those guys are just brilliant. You've got the guys over at Nansen.ai, really smart. But for me, I really like CoinGecko in order to see all these sorts of market caps. It's like a super, super simple, basic website that anybody could look at. One of the like relative kind of valuations that I've been like trading and thinking about, full disclosure, is like the relationship between Synthetics, SNX, and Mirror Protocol, which they're trying to do very similar things. And Synthetics is like this, you know, derivatives platform on Ethereum, and Mirror Protocol is doing the same thing on Terra Network. And I just see Terra Network and Luna, right? They have such a smaller relative valuation. They've got an amazing team. We just had Do Kwon on the show, and he's just like a legend and like just churning product out after product. So I see Synthetics at a $3.8 billion market cap in Mirror Protocol at a $500 million market cap. And I say, well, there's like, you know, a 6X or 7X discrepancy that you could play a little catch up on. And so I think that's another way is like, you know, to answer your question, Aaron, is like just diving in, doing your research and seeing, just going through the list on CoinGecko and just clicking them, like click Bitcoin, number one, click Ethereum, number two, read all the links that are in there and go to their social media sites and start to do your research. And then you could go, by the time you'll find, you know, you click over page two, you're on, you know, number 165, this crypto, and you're like, holy crap, this crypto is going to change the world. And chances are it might not, but you're going to start to find all these different things. And then once you click one, you'll say, hey, that sounds like really similar to this other thing. For instance, we put out an alert the other day about the discrepancy between Chainlink and Tether, right? Tether is like, you know, this Oracle that's like doing some really phenomenal things. But it's valued like, you know, 100 times, like literally 100 times smaller than Chainlink. Of course, Chainlink has much more adoption and it's bigger, but even if it catches up, you know, to a little bit, it'll, you know, maybe 10X or 20X. So that's kind of how I think about it, but I appreciate you asking that question.
Yeah, that's really brilliant. And I'm glad you said do research, because that's such an important thing, is not just to jump into a position off a couple of metrics. You need to really understand what these things are doing to know if your green apple is really the same species of fruit as your red apple, because there's never one thing in crypto that is exactly like another. There's always some differences and tweaks and things. I got a message last night asking me if I think the Chia blockchain is legit. And I said, yeah, I think so. And the follow-up question to that is, should I sell my Filecoin? And I said, what? No, why in the world would you do that? And he says, well, they're both, you know, storage coins. So why would I need two? And I said, well, Chia is actually more like Bitcoin than it is Filecoin. While they both have components of using storage, the way they use storage is entirely different. So that led to a bunch of other questions. And I just said, whoa, man, slow down. Go do some homework before you dump any kind of money long-term into right. either of these projects, because you really need to understand what they're trying to do and achieve.
And I'm going to say one more thing, just because that's such a great message to all the Crypto 101 listeners, is like, before you go and swing for the fences, you know, prove to yourself that you could get some solid singles and get some on bases, right? And so before swinging for a home run with $10,000, you know, start with $100 and just get your feet wet. And most importantly, get acclimated to the climate, because volatility in crypto, I mean, on an annualized basis, Bitcoin has, you know, volatility between, you know, 75% and 100%. Ethereum and Litecoin are between 90 and 120% on an annualized basis. And you have something like MakerDAO, which is still a fundamentally strong asset sound, but on an annualized basis has volatility of 128%. When you look at the S&P 500, it has an 18.1% annualized volatility. So what we're seeing here is like, guys, asymmetric opportunities. A little can go a very long way in the volatility that we were talking about in the beginning with Rob that makes you want to throw up sometimes. It is just literally a function of the newness of this space, of the illiquidity of this space, of the inherent risk in the space that this could go to zero or it could go to a million, like that whole thing. And so don't go like, you know, too deep and scare yourself and, you know, make sure you have enough money to cover expenses. My God, I can't believe I have to say it. But when we see panic like we saw in the markets, we just want to reiterate that. But enough about markets in general. Rob, I want to dive into HERO. It's the reason why we're all here today, and it's what's really important. So let's talk about why you started HERO, what the vision is, and then we'll dive into some specifics.
That sounds great. Well, yeah, HERO, which, you know, spelled a little differently for people. It's HXRO. We replaced the E with the X because, you know, when we first started, HERO kind of had a more alternative or X Games feel in when it came to our contracts. The first contract that my partner Dan Gunsberg and I we came up with, we named Moon Wrecked. And it was really because we were deep into crypto and you know, moon obviously is where you want to go. It's when the price is pumping, when the price goes higher, and getting wrecked is somewhere that we all of us have been at one time or another. And believe me, you'll be there again at some point or another, because no one gets everything right. But that's when the price really goes down right in your face and you're a bag holder. So Moon Wrecked was basically a simple parimutuel contract. We were sitting around in the office trading crypto and looking at some of these new derivatives exchanges that were popping up. You know, obviously BitMEX was the biggie with their perpetual futures contract, perpetual swap, which I think was a brilliant contract where they have this embedded funding rate.
You should win a Nobel Financial Laureate Prize for that thing.
It really is great. And the thing that always bummed us out is we're from the US, we're in the US and we couldn't trade it. But it didn't mean that it wasn't an amazing type of contract. And these perpetual futures or swaps have really exploded. They do tens of billions of dollars of volume a day in Bitcoin alone right now. Like they are some of it's kind of the place for price discovery for Bitcoin, to be honest with you, more than spot even. But so we were looking at all these different platforms and, you know, coming from as a pro market maker, we know what it's like to compete with the high frequency traders. And the one thing about the contract we designed was it was parimutuel. So it was pool-based, kind of like horse racing, where when you pick an outcome and you take a position there, the outcome that wins takes the whole pool. And depending on what kind of weighting you are in that pool, you get a pro rata share of the entire pool. So Moon Wrecked basically asked people, will the next hourly candle for Bitcoin be green or red? You know, the chart is such an integral part of trading for everybody. And we all look at it and we run analyses on it and on these standardized timeframes. So Moonrect was really a way to predict whether each candle was going to be higher or lower, green or red, or moon or rect. So these contracts are perpetual in nature. When one ends, the next one begins. So you're literally entering a pool for every 1 minute candle, every 5 minute candle, every 15 minute candle, hour candle, daily candle, and they all play against one another. And it's really turned into kind of a new way to trade the market. And you're not trading against like high frequency. It's not about speed, but it's about your win rate. And it's about what side is the favorite each time and watching the trend. So we put out a prototype of Moonrect in January, New Year's Day of 2019. It was like the heart of the bear market. Bitcoin was like $3,800. I mean, people had lost hope. It wasn't even moving around a lot at the time. And we put this out and, the 35 kind of crypto traders and crypto Twitter people we invited in, they loved it.
I remember Crypto Messiah was just all over this.
He was all over. And it was a little kind of beta where we it was a sandbox. We put tokens in there and let people just trade with them. And it was crazy. I mean, people were in there for 12 hour sessions. And it brought about this kind of the same sweat, the same emotional feeling as trading like expiration in the trading pit when, you know, there was so much risk.
You brought back that just energy.
Yes, and the time, the clock. So on expiration day, that's when all the contracts expire. So there's a tremendous amount of risk that changes hands right at expiration. And what Moonrect was with the clock there, every 5 minute candle, you're seeing the clock countdown. It really brought back that feeling. So you know, you're going to find out if you were correct or incorrect on the previous candle. And then you have to take a position on the next candle right there as you're leading into the end, as the clock's counting down. It was a real, real roller coaster and people loved it. So from there, that was like, the most gamified contract. And then the following year, we put out these contracts called Tix Wix contracts. And these are
very familiar.
a different type of option. The Wix contract is a play on words with the wicks on the chart. And you know, when a chart's making those big wicks, that means the price is either going down or up, and then it's reversing dramatically and going the other way. And it leaves this big wick on the chart with a higher low. So basically a wicks contract lets you take a position on whether the price will touch a certain level before a certain time. And that's called like a one touch option. And then the Tix contracts are, will Bitcoin close above 60,000 before May 30th or on May 30th? So it's more, a standard option where you're saying, will it close above or below that level? And the Tix Wix contracts, they're available on Bitcoin, on Ethereum, on Solana, on Doge. They're really great ways to both hedge your risk, manage risk, and also to speculate where you have very clear risk reward, limited loss, and you know exactly what your payout is going to be. And unfortunately, it's not available to U.S. Residents, but if you're outside the U.S., they're really great instruments.
That's awesome. And so if somebody wants to get involved, do they transact with Bitcoin? Do they transact with their bank account? You know, somebody who's, you know, over, you know, in Europe or Asia, and they want to kind of check this out, because as I'm aware, it's not currently available to folks in the US. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. US. So folks, you can use a number of tokens. You can use Bitcoin, you can use Ethereum, you can use the HERO token, HXRO, you can use USDC, you can use USDT. And you can send it to the wallet. It's all in cold storage. And you can use those to trade these contracts. The Tix Wix contracts are actually in a partnership with FTX. So if you have an FTX account, you can link your account through API key and you wouldn't even need to fund a new wallet. You can do it directly from your FTX wallet, which is great. So
that's phenomenal. That's so cool.
Wonderful for FTX.com users, non-US. It's really makes it easy, and it's great.
Everywhere I go, I hear FTX is adding more and more value. If you have not checked out FTX.us, if you're in the United States, definitely do so.
Yep. It's the best exchange. I would say if you're going to open an exchange in the US, FTX.us, that's the place to be. The liquidity, the service, I love it.
Yeah, the functionality. It's great.
So Rob, what does the HXRO token do in the ecosystem?
Well, so currently, we're transitioning right now. Hero Network is being built. So we are building these contracts, both the parimutuel contracts and options contracts on chain. So we're building it on the Solana network, and it is very, very exciting. Really,
the Hero token will be like the governance token. Exactly. I imagine.
Hero token's a governance token. There's going to be staking. And those who stake the Hero token are going to share in the network fees that are generated through these contracts that are traded. So
that's phenomenal.
It's great. And Hero token is going to be the governance token, and it gets you fee discounts and all the other benefits of being a Hero token holder and staker. Rebates and a lot of other stuff.
It'll be the linchpin of the system, holding everything together, the glue.
Exactly.
So Rob, while we still have you on the show, is there anything else that we hadn't asked you about Hero that you really wanted to highlight before we get into some closing questions?
So we just made a purchase of something called Hero Bot, which is a really fascinating platform that two early beta users built, two French guys, and they were the first automated traders on Hero. And they started automating these strategies that would take into account different indicators. And if the moving average was above here, then I'm going to go moon. And if it's below here, I'm going to go rect. And working in all these different indicators, and they built a backtesting model to test these strategies. And the HeroBot users are hands down much more successful at moon rect than someone who's just kind of manually using it without looking at some of these tools. So we're we're incorporating HeroBot into the platform right now, and I encourage people to check that out. We're going to have a lot more features coming out on that, but it introduces this light automation, right? A little bit of quantitative analysis, where even for beginners, and there's people who use HeroBot that don't trade, but it's more of kind of like a Billy Bean Moneyball thing, right? Like you're finding out a different way. I'm going to bat 550. I can come up with a 55% win rate strategy. And the way that it works with, even with Hero token holders and rebates, you can develop positive expected value strategies that lets you build liquidity within the platform, within the system. It's great for the network. And it also, it makes sense for token holders and for traders who can learn the system and learn, some light automation. We're really excited about it. And you're going to be hearing a lot more about it in the coming weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, one thing that I've just always applauded, you guys in the background for has just been the fact that the platform is so user-friendly and it's so approachable. Like, it's not this pretentious, options, people in their ivory tower. It's like flashing lights and it looks like it could be an esports tournament, and like it's gamified, and it's truly, like you said, it's like you're building these products for the people, right? Yep. For people who never could code their own trading bot, could never break down their own options book. It's like you guys do that for them, and it's a really awesome platform. So
it's trading simplified. We try trading to simplify some things, and I think that's the best way to approach things. And I'll tell you what, people who think they might never be able to automate trade, like, don't say never, because I've seen it happen where people, they look at it, they learn it, and something just clicks differently and they can do it. So It's, I mean, using these kind of, we call decision support tools, but using these tools that have gotten better and better over the years and continue to get better, it's very important, because the one thing you can expect is that the other market participants, your competition out there, they're all doing it. You've got to always assume that people are studying all night. They're out working you. So you really need to work and do everything you can to compete with the market. It's tough out there.
It's hard out there for a crypto grinder, ain't it?
It is. It's
oh God,
crazy.
Well, Rob, one last question before we let you go, and get back to, you know, creating the future of finance and all that jazz. We just want to know, you know, again, this is probably, you know, one of the first podcasts that a lot of people are listening to as they're getting into this space. So if this is that person's first time listening to a crypto podcast, what's that one just word of advice, just word of wisdom, word of encouragement, whatever it might be?
Sure. Well, here's the thing that I hear a lot and I see a lot. And, you know, a lot of people are hearing about crypto because their friends or their coworkers or their uncles or cousins are telling them stories about, I put $1,000 into Dogecoin and now I have $5,000. And this is like real. You gotta get into this. But those type of stories are rare and they're pretty much unsustainable. Don't do this as a get rich quick scheme. Mm. You have to go in with a plan. Don't, if you've got $5,000 in your savings account, don't put $5,000 into XYZ coin because this guy told you about it and this guy, and you're seeing a YouTuber talk about it. You cannot, in the long run, you're not going to win by just placing one big bet on something. Diversify. And also, you don't have to put it all in it at the beginning to think like, this is the last time I'm going to buy Bitcoin below 50,000 or the last. I mean, you can say that about everything, but make sure that you are conservative with how you allocate your resources. You never want to see like a big pullback in the market where you don't have dry powder to buy more at a better price, right? Dry powder is key. So, you know, don't look for the get rich quick. I'm going to 5X, I'm going to 10X by getting into XYZ coin because I just read about it. No, diversify, make a bunch of little bets while you get your, you know, bearings here.
Couldn't have said it better myself, man.
That's awesome, Rob. Thank you so much for all the wonderful advice and training you've given us today. And thank you for building an amazing platform. Full disclosure, Bryce and I have some hero tokens. We'll be participating on the app, and we're super excited for what you built and what you're building in the future. So with that, we've had a heroic episode today, and it's about time to take that cape off, hang it up, and go on and get back to building, all three of us. So
thanks, Rob.
Where can the people find you? Where can they check out Hero? Give us the URL.
Yeah, check out Hero. You can go to hxro.io. You should definitely look us up on Twitter at Real Hero. Check out Hero Network. You're going to be reading a lot more about that as we move to decentralizing these contracts. Really, really excited about that. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Levy. That's RobbyLevy. I'm out there talking about the market and you know, try to keep my meme game in decent shape.
But, excellent.
Yeah.
HXRO.io is the place we're going to go. I didn't even intend to rhyme that, but your branding is really on point. All right. That's it.
Good right, stuff, guys. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.